Hi, everyone. So again, my name is Henry. I'm from University of Toronto. And this is joint work done with my colleague, Chen, and my advisor, Baochun, in the Department of ECE. So first of all, I'd like to thank you for staying out the last session of the conference. I understand that there's a lot of other things you can do in this Bay Area instead of listening to me. And given this nice, extremely nice weather, so really appreciate that you're sitting here. So I'm going to talk about geo-distributed data centers in this talk. And as you probably know, a lot of the technology companies, specifically companies in this Bay Area, deploy a lot of data centers across the entire globe, which is so-called geo-distributed data centers. So let's just take the most preeminent example, Google. And this figure shows you the actual Google data center locations around the globe. And as you can see, there are five, six data centers in the US, one in South America, and a couple of others in the Europe and Asia. Okay, so it's truly geo-distributed. And the purpose of having this geo-distributed infrastructure is to improve both the service reliability and also performance. So obviously, if you have multiple data centers, you're going to have better redundancy in terms of the data you have. And you're going to have better performance, latency performance, if your data center is closer to the user location. Okay? So a lot of other companies like Microsoft and Facebook following the suit as well. And with this kind of setup, geo-distributed data centers, we have one natural problem to address. That is the request routing problem. So what is this request routing? So here, basically, we assume that the user data is replicated across the wide area, across all of the data centers. Okay. So imagine that all of the indices of the web pages for Google or your Gmail data, they are replicated across all of these data centers. And with this kind of assumption, whenever we have a user request coming to access our service, we can basically route this request to any one of these data centers, okay? And they can be processed at any one of them. So we need to decide how to exactly route these user requests across all the candidate data centers according to some criteria, right? So the natural thing to do is just to route them to the closest data center, okay? This gives users the best latency performance. But this may not be optimal in terms of the energy cost, okay? So the key observation here is that the energy price is actually pretty different across different areas. So if we take a look at the empirical energy prices as shown here, then you can see it's really different in different areas. And probably in some of the Asian locations, it's much more expensive. And even for the US data centers, they're also quite different in different states. So people have tried to exploit this diversity of energy price. And basically, they try to say that instead of routing requests to the closest location, maybe we can route requests to locations that are close and have very cheap energy price, okay? So by doing this, we can save the energy cost of processing these requests. And recently, there are a lot of papers that are trying to attack this problem along this line of thinking. So we're trying to also study this problem along this line of research, but in this work, we're trying to consider two missing aspects in the existing work. So I'm going to introduce what are these two important missing pieces. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is data center cooling system. So as you may know, cooling system is the single biggest energy overhead for data center operations. So usually it takes about 30 to 50% of the total energy consumption. And to model this overhead, previously people have assumed that the cooling energy efficiency, that is the PUE of the data center, would be a constant, Okay, so it's the same PUE value for all the data center locations and for all the times. Okay, so if you think about it, naturally, this would not be the case in reality, right? So we try to look at this assumption, and we did some empirical measurements of a production cooling system, which is called CRAC, Computer Room Air Conditioning Unit. And what we find is this table. So we can see that the PUE value dramatically decreases as the outside temperature decreases. Okay, so it's not a constant. And the reason is that nowadays the modern cooling systems, they can operate in different modes. So when the outside air is very hot, like it's 35 degrees or 95 degrees for the American folks, so the PUE is really high, okay, 1.3 or something. And the cooling unit is using mechanical cooling cycles, basically, the compressors and stuff. So that consumes a lot of energy. But when the outside temperature is very, very low, we can actually directly use the outside air to cool down our servers and without running any of the mechanical cooling cycles. Okay? And in fact, this outside air cooling technology is what Facebook and Google is using, deploying in their data centers. So with this technique, you can have very low PUE value, around 1.1 or 1.05. Okay? So basically, what this tells us is that cooling energy efficiency for a modern cooling system would not be a constant. Okay? And it largely depends on the outside temperature. And of course, if we have data centers different locations, then temperatures in these locations is also vastly different. So here, we also did some empirical analysis for the temperatures at some selected Google data center locations. And here you can see that the daily average temperature varies a lot in different locations. Okay? And especially if you have some data center in the southern hemisphere, then you're going to see a very, very different variation pattern compared to the other locations. And of course, if we look at, we kind of zoom in time and look at the daily temperature variations, as shown here, then you can see within one day, 24 hours time, the temperature also varies a lot, which means that the PUE value of the data center varies a lot. Okay? So with these observations, empirical observations, our first idea is to look at the temperature diversity in addition to the price diversity, and we're trying to route more user requests to the cooler locations, which are more energy efficient. And by doing this, we can probably save more energy consumption and cost, because we're simply using less cooling energy. Okay? So that's our first idea. And the second idea that we have is about the nature of data center workloads. So for one data center, it typically allocates a number of servers to run the so-called interactive workloads. So these are driven by the user request, as we mentioned. And basically, the problem here is the request routing that I just mentioned. But data center also runs another kind of workload, which is called batch workloads. For example, a lot of the Hadoop and machine learning tasks and the indexing of web pages, the crawling, these jobs are the typical example of batch workloads. Okay? So for these batch workloads, we cannot reroute them across from one area to another. Because if we want to do that, then there's a huge amount of data transfer that we have to do. So that's impractical to do. But these batch workloads have some very unique characteristics. So they are typically delay tolerant, and they are resource elastic. This means that they don't care too much about when we can finish them, and it's OK to allocate less resources to run them. Okay? So naturally, this motivates our second idea. Now, we observed that previously, people assumed the capacity allocation between these two kinds of workloads is fixed. Okay? But as you can imagine, we can actually dynamically adjust the capacity allocation And if this data center location is more like cooling efficient, then we can probably allocate more capacity to handle interactive workloads by reducing the capacity for batch workloads. Okay? And by adjusting the capacity allocation, then we can probably have more degree of freedom to optimize for energy consumption. So this is the second idea. With these two ideas, so in our work, we consider the temperature-aware holistic workload management. Okay, and in the following time, I'm just gonna introduce some more details about our work. So first, I'm gonna talk about the system model and problem formulation, and then I'll briefly introduce a distributed optimization algorithm to solve this problem. And finally, I'm just going to show you some trace-driven simulation results that we have. Okay, so system model. So before I dig into the details of problem formulation, I would like to first give you some of the assumptions that we make and kind of do a reality check for these assumptions, just to make sure that it's faithful in capturing all the real scenarios. So in our model, for the concept of user, we assume that a user is represented by a unique IP prefix. Okay? So a user is actually a group of individual users that are coming from the same network, from the same area. And in reality, this is also a common practice. For example, Akamai is using the same IP prefix as the basis for their request routing algorithms. Okay? So this is good. And for request traffic, we basically assume that it's arbitrarily splittable among the data centers. So we can split these request traffic in any portion that we like. And in reality, this is also common practice, and we can use a lot of different ways to do this. For example, DNS routing and HTTP proxies. Okay. And finally, for the time scale of our optimization problem, we assume that it's down every hour, okay? And this is also commonly assumed in the related works. And basically here we also assume that at this time scale, the aggregate traffic for individual users is fairly predictable. And also the energy price, the electricity price at different locations is assumed to be known for the data center operators. Okay, so one important piece in our system model is the model for the energy cost. So to calculate the total energy cost at data center J, we use the following formula. So let me spend a little bit of time explaining this. So this energy cost EJ would be a function of the total amount of workloads WJ at this location. And if we look at it, the first term here is actually the empirical server power model from Google's cluster measurements. So it basically says that the server power is the sum of idle power plus the utilization power. So the idle power is simply the total number of servers you have, CJ, times the individual server idle power. Okay, and the utilization power is the amount of workloads you have in terms of the servers you require, WJ times the utilization power, which is the peak power minus the server idle power. Okay, so this captures the server power, and then we multiply the server power by the PUE factor, which is a function of the temperature, outside temperature that I mentioned before. So this captures the entire data center power consumption, and then multiply by the price at this location. This gives you the total energy cost, right? So this figure just shows you the exact form of the PUE function as a function of the temperature. So what we did here is just to, we have these data points that I showed in the previous table, and then we apply regression technique to get this function as our empirical model, okay? So now, this comes to the probably one of the most heavyweight slides in the talk. So the let me try to explain the problem formulation a little bit. So before that, there are just a couple of notations that you need to know. So first, we use the term alpha ij to denote the amount of workloads that we sent from user I to location j. Okay? And then we use beta j to denote the total amount of workload, batch workloads at data center j. Okay? So alpha and beta. And then we can formulate the problem like shown here. Okay? So it's a big optimization. And basically, if we look at the objective function up here, it considers two aspects. The first, energy cost, and second, utility loss. So energy cost, as I explained, is just the financial cost of using energy. Okay? And utility loss here models the revenue loss associated with performance. So let me try to explain turn by turn now. So the first two things, EJ, are basically the energy cost function that we have seen. So they capture the energy cost for interactive and batch workloads. Okay? So these are easy. And these two functions, U and V, correspond to the utility loss functions. So for batch workloads, beta J, here we have VJ, which is a per data center utility loss function. So this captures the performance loss related to the resource allocation for batch workloads. And we don't assume any particular form of this function. So we just assume that this function is a general convex and decreasing function. Because if you allocate more resources to run batch workloads, they can finish faster, and you have less resource utility loss. Okay, so this is V. And this UI function is the per-user utility loss function for the interactive workloads. So for interactive workloads, the latency is probably the most important performance metric. Okay? So here we assume this U is a function of the average latency that the user experiences. And the average latency L is, of course, dependent on how we route the requests. Okay? So L would be a function of alpha I, where alpha I is simply a vector of all the alpha ij's. Okay? Again, U can take any form. As long as U is a increasing and convex function. So it's increasing because if the latency is larger, then obviously you have more utility loss. Okay? So this explains the objective function. And then the constraints are pretty easy to understand, I think. So the first constraint is the simple workload conservation constraint. Basically says each user's demand, DI, needs to be processed at all locations, no matter how you route them. And then the second constraint is saying that the capacity of each data center needs to be conserved. Okay, so that's the problem formulation. Now, if you look at the formulation a little bit closely, you would observe that this is basically a convex optimization. Right? And so you can basically throw any convex optimization solver at the problem, and you can get the results. So what's the big deal about this problem? Well, this problem is difficult because the problem scale is really big. Now, for a practical system, because we are dealing with IP prefixes, so the number of IP prefixes is really large. Okay, and this means that the optimization problem can have millions of variables and also hundreds of thousands of constraints. And for this kind of scale, usually you want to have a distributed algorithm to solve the optimization, just to make sure that things can be computed in a parallel fashion to speed up. Okay? And typically, you would use dual decomposition with subgradient methods to solve the problem. Okay? So this method has two severe drawbacks. First, it required very delicate step size adjustment. And the convergence time is really slow, especially when the problem is larger scale. Okay, so here, this motivates us to consider a different method for solving the optimization, which is called ADMM, Alternating Direction Method of Multilivers. Okay, so this method offers very fast convergence, especially for larger scale problems. And it has been applied recently to solve a lot of data mining and machine learning problems. So this seems great, but the limitation for this method is that it only works for problems with two sets of variables, and they have to be connected by an equality constraint. And this obviously does not apply to our problem formulation. Okay. So here, we have to develop a generalized algorithm, ADMM algorithm, to make sure that our problem can be solved. And due to the time constraint, I'll just briefly talk about the idea of this algorithm. So basically, it's still an iterative algorithm that solves a problem in the due domain. And in each iteration, first, we try to minimize the utility loss for the interactive workloads. And we get the optimal solution, alpha k. Okay? So this is very simple. And it turns out that this problem can also be decomposed to the user level. So this can be computed by each user in a parallel fashion. Okay? So after this step, we're going to also compute a solution that minimizes the energy cost of the interactive workloads. Okay? So this solution is different from the first step, which we call A. But to make sure that these two sets of solutions eventually converge to the same solution, because they are mostly dealing with the same interactive workloads, so we add a penalty term here to make sure that they converge to the same solution. Okay? So again, this can also be decomposed to the data center level problems. And we carry on the same step. Now is for the batch workloads. So we minimize the total cost for all of the batch workloads. We get the optimal beta. And here we also add a penalty term here just to make sure that when solving the problem, we do not violate the capacity constraint. Okay? So that's the basic idea. And again, the problem is decomposable, which speed up things. And eventually, we update the due variables, and this whole iteration continues. Okay? So in the paper, we provide a proof for the convergence of the algorithm. So basically, it can work for problems with any set of variables now, and you can apply this algorithm to other problems as well. So now let me quickly just jump to the evaluation figures. So we use Wikipedia request trace as a basis for our evaluation, and also empirical temperatures, latency, and electricity price data to evaluate. And we compare basically our approach with three different baseline schemes. And basically, the result shows that in terms of both cooling energy and utility loss savings, our scheme performs about 20 to 15% better than the state-of-the-art schemes. Okay? And the performance improvement is also consistent across the seasons. So you can see that different seasons, you have different temperature variance, but our performance improvement is consistent. Okay, and this slide just shows the convergence performance of our algorithm. Basically, it's much faster than subgradient methods. So I guess that would be most of the talk. So this is the related work. Due to time constraint, I'm not gonna talk in detail. Okay.
Hi, very interesting talk. I just want to have one question. How's your work compared with 2012 masking metric paper from Leo from Caltech about cooling aware workload scheduling?
That paper is about one data center instead of multiple data centers in different
areas. But they don't have a scaling problem, so how?
Sorry?
I mean, they don't really have a scaling problem, so they can easily adopt to multiple data centers. Have you considered them as a baseline comparing with your work?
What is the second part of the question?
Their solution doesn't really have scaling problems, which okay. can be scaled to multiple data centers.
Right. So
have you considered as a baseline to compare with your work?
Right. So I think they don't have a scaling problem because in their model they're not really dealing with the IP prefix level.
Mm-hmm.
So they have much less number of variables compared to our setting, and that's why That's why we kind of have a different problem than their formulation.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
So if in if you have a power grid where you have some unpredictable sources of energy, some unpredictable producers like solar panels or wind turbines, then the cost of your energy might be negative sometimes. Like you might be encouraged to consume in order to get rid of some production bursts, right? So would your method be applicable to that? Could the data center manage in that way help with that? So as to say channel all the requests towards the data center, so the data center could.
Right. So you are saying mostly the renewable resources that are kind of unpredictable.
Yes, they create production bursts that you have to consume because otherwise you have a blackout. So
right.
Your data center help with that as a big consumer?
I believe they can also be integrated into our framework. So in here, we don't consider any renewables, but if we want to consider the renewables, then I think the basic idea is that whenever you have these renewables, because they are kind of cheaper. I mean, they're not exactly cheaper, but they are kind of hard to store, or like whenever they are generated, you have to consume them. So it's like you first consider the renewable sources, and then whatever is left, you kind of get them from the grid. So you kind of treat them differently. The renewable would be your priority source of energy, and the grid would be the secondary energy source. So that's off the top of my mind how we could deal with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey. In your work, you actually assume that the electricity price is actually the same. So I don't know if you modeled that.
No. So they can vary over time.
Yeah, they can vary. That's what I was asking, actually.
Yeah,
so you are assuming that they are varying over time. So you are assuming that they are actually varying over the time.
Yeah. So we just assume that they are known like at each time slot before we run the optimization. So, for example, if we run at 3 o'clock, we basically assume that the price at 3 o'clock is available to us.
Okay, thanks. One question for everyone else, actually. Is Usenix Wi-Fi down or it's working?
Yeah.
It's down? Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Actually, mine is probably going to take too long. We can talk about
it.
Okay, so thank you very much once more.